Welcome to United Voices, the podcast that shares the voices of our community champions and partners making real change across Waterloo Region. My name is Laura Griffiths, and I'm part of the United Voices team. In today's episode, my colleague Jill Laurie is joined by Jennifer Hutton, Executive Director of Women's Crisis Services of Waterloo Region, a vital organization providing safety, shelter, and support to women and children experiencing domestic violence.
Jen, thank you so much for joining us on United Voices. We're so excited to learn a bit more about the work that you do. So could you start just by telling us a bit about Women's Crisis Services and the role that you've seen it play in our community?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to be here and to chat more. Women's Crisis Services of Waterloo Region, we're often known for our two shelters. We have Anselma House in Kitchener and we have Haven House in Cambridge. And those shelters are really for women and children who have experienced domestic violence. Another big part of our work is also outreach services. So we meet with individuals in the community. We also have really, in the last number of years, focused a lot of our efforts on prevention and education. As we know, we need to do that work to really shift domestic violence, knowing that the rates are quite high.
As I learned a little bit more about your organization, and we'll talk a bit more about our Women United event, but through that Women United event, I learned a bit about the hotline and just the number of calls that come in and the support that you actually give in that form of outreach as well as the shelters. So that's really remarkable.
Yeah. Our 24/7 crisis support line have well over 1,000 folks reach out to us through that. That's also often the way that people come into our shelter or get a referral into one of our programs.
What are some of the challenges women and children face when coming into a shelter environment?
It can be pretty daunting for women and children to come in to our shelter. And we do have quite large shelters. Each of our shelter has 45 beds. So we have 90 shelter beds for our community. We're actually one of the largest violence against women shelters in Canada. Mm-hmm. And at any one time, about half of our residents are children. So we are really supporting moms and kids for the most part. So when a mom and oftentimes her children come to us, the first thing we do is try to make them feel comfortable and feel safe and get them just set up so that they have a bit of a tour of the facility. And also very early on in the process, we do a risk assessment and safety planning. That is definitely one of our core tasks across all our programs, because the families that we are supporting, safety is often, well, pretty much every time, a factor. So we need to look at that, and there can be different risk factors depending on different families, and we want to safety plan as soon as possible. So even if they are coming into shelter, they're still having a safety plan, because we know oftentimes they do need to leave the shelter and go into the community and to be safe in doing so. And we have all sorts of programs in the shelter. We like to say we're much more than shelter, because we have everything from food nutrition programming, a nurse practitioner that comes in. We offer music therapy, a variety of counseling programs, child and youth programs, you name it. So it kind of becomes a little bit of a community in and of itself, too.
That's amazing. I had no idea that our region had such significant supports, especially when you compare it across the country. How does somebody get access to the shelter? Is it through your phone line and referral, or how does that work?
Yeah, oftentimes it is through the phone line. And during our crisis call, if somebody is looking for shelter, then there is that discussion happening and a safe exit plan being established. So the staff on the other end of the crisis line might be asking things like, when might be a safe time to go? Reminding people that as part of that plan to make sure they have their important documents, that they have their birth certificates, passports, all those things. And it's quite a specific plan because, again, safety is paramount, as it is the highest risk time when a woman is looking to leave a domestic violence situation. So we have to do that very carefully and very purposefully. So that could include specific timing of that exit, and that might involve us sending a taxi as part of that plan. So there's a very specific plan based on that family. So oftentimes they are calling through the crisis line to come into shelter. Sometimes that is a referral from a community partner, and sometimes they are at our doorstep and they're with their items and coming into shelter that way.
Well, it's not a happy story, but it's really wonderful to hear that there's so many different pathways, and helping someone through that crisis is so critical. Domestic violence has been declared an epidemic across Canada, including here in Waterloo region. What does that mean for your organization?
Those declarations have been very, very meaningful. We were very fortunate to have all three cities in our region and the region of Waterloo, including one of our townships, all formally make that declaration. A group of us, of community partners from the Family Violence Project, often, for the most part, we're delegating and requesting that declaration. Now we've had 95 municipalities across Ontario formally make that declaration. And there's a good reason for that. Obviously, gender-based violence is a crisis. It's a public health crisis. It's a huge, huge social problem that we're having to navigate. But specifically, this was a recommendation that came out of the Renfrew County inquest. And the reason why there was an inquest in Renfrew County was because sadly there was a tragedy where three women were killed by the same ex-partner. So that led to an inquest that came out with 86 recommendations, and the number one recommendation being the declaration that intimate partner violence or gender-based violence is an epidemic. And the other good thing that has happened locally, that was another one of those 86 recommendations, was that gender-based violence be added as a priority or a pillar of the community safety and well-being plan that municipalities need to have as a provincial mandate. So that's also where the action comes about, because it's highlighted as a specific thing in our community that needs to be worked on with goals and objectives and measurables and all those things. So that also is what really brings that declaration to light. But even the declaration itself is a big message to survivors and to those working in the field that acknowledges the seriousness of the issue.
Absolutely. And I think you were one of the organizations that we cited. It was back in December when we are kind of wrapping up the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. And we really look to your organization as one of the leaders in providing support and information. And it is really shocking. I recall that campaign and the number of women and gender diverse individuals, like the percentage of people that really suffer from domestic partner violence. And it's a shockingly large number.
It
And
is. It's obviously a global issue, but we know it's very present in our community. When you think about our local Waterloo Regional Police, have about 6,000 domestic violence service calls a year. So number is quite high when you think about
wow.
it. Also knowing only about 30% actually are calling the police. So
Wow.
that gives you a bit of a sense of in our community, we have a very wonderful community, but this is very present.
Yeah, I just used a calculator, and that
Okay.
is 16 calls a day. Like, that
Yeah.
is a really high number.
Yeah. It's about a call about almost every 90 minutes. So, yeah.
Okay, let's pivot this conversation to talk about some good
Yes.
stuff. One of the reasons you and I first were able to connect was through our new volunteer committee, Women United, who selected the Women's Crisis Services as the recipient of our first event, and were able to donate $20,000 to Women's Crisis Services. So I'd love to hear a little bit about what that funding made possible.
Yes, we were so grateful for that funding. We know we rely on the community for about 40% of our funding. And oftentimes it's the prevention and education programs that are not funded. So when we think about $20,000, that means so much for all the youth that we teach in schools across the region. It is a number of people that go through our music therapy program. It's helps support our She Is Your Neighbor podcast. It does so many things around that prevention role that is just so important. When we were chatting earlier, I had mentioned to you about our music therapy program, partly because this is a program that we're running 4 days a week. So it's like full-time program. And it is one of the most beloved programs of the residents that are staying in our shelter. And we just have some incredible stories because music therapy is life-changing for a lot of the people that we support. And sometimes they come in and they say, I want nothing to do with music therapy. I'm not musical. I can't play an instrument. But our music therapist, Kathy, has a very special gift and tends to really connect with people on a variety of basis. And they do find themselves in the music therapy room. And I think why it's so powerful for the residents is because we know that sometimes traditional talk therapy can be hard for people. It can be hard to put to words the experiences that they have. And music can often be a way to work through some of those emotions and really help to bond moms with their kids. And we know that that bond can often be put a bit at risk because of trauma and family violence. So that really has helped that. We've even had a young boy in our shelter that was struggling with some bullying at school because he would stutter and his stutter would worsen with stress. And working with Kathy, the music therapist, he found that when he was drumming, that it would help his stuttering. So then he actually started to drum on the side of his leg whenever he was feeling stressed or was struggling with stuttering. And it made a huge difference. And having his mom witness this difference and his increase of confidence was huge. And we have so many stories like that. It's really a powerful program.
Oh, that's amazing, Jen. And I know you had actually shared one with me, and we're working on a Women United newsletter. So I'm excited to share
Terrific.
another story. And that whole
Yes.
time you were talking about music, I was just smiling because I
Yeah.
really agree and understand the way music and movement can really somatically move trauma. So I can just imagine how impactful that is when there's challenges that people aren't comfortable talking about, but music can kind
Exactly.
of help start getting that moving. So
It
I think
can, it
that's
really
wonderful.
can.
And I'm
Yeah.
so happy that we can contribute a little bit to that. I wanted to touch on affordable housing and homelessness and how it relates to the work that you do. We started this podcast actually with a whole series talking about housing and homelessness. Can you unpack a little bit with how that housing crisis is intersecting with this epidemic?
Yeah, absolutely. You use a really important word when you say intersection. There is a huge intersection between homelessness and gender-based violence. Obviously, more times than not, a woman or a gender diverse individual that are experiencing violence are the ones having to leave the home because of that experience and ultimately have to find a place to live. And then, of course, there is women or gender diverse individuals that find themselves in a situation of being homeless. And we know that they're at greater risk for gender-based violence. So all sorts of different connections there. What we have also seen through the affordable housing crisis is we have seen our length of stay in shelter really increase. You know, had you had asked me 4 or 5 years ago what our average length of stay would be, I would say probably about 8 weeks, maybe 12 weeks. But now we have stories of people staying in shelter for 6 months, a year, even in one situation. And Obviously, a shelter is not the place to have to stay for that long, but there's just not a lot of options. And during the pandemic, that was the first time we had got officially into transitional housing by purchasing a triplex and offering some of that because we knew it was such an immediate need. Now, that is kind of a drop in the bucket in terms of the need, but we were able to turn that around pretty fast. So it's had a huge impact on those that we serve. We're often known traditionally for supporting women and children. However, we know to increase the safety for women and children that we needed to look to how do we support the whole family and have even moved to now offering counseling for men who are using abusive behavior. Now, for the most part, this has been a gap in services. We know that men who are charged often are mandated to attend a PAR program, the Partner Assault Response Program, which is quite an effective program for men when it's mandated and they get that support. However, we know oftentimes that support may not be enough. And what about for those? Because we do have situations where men recognize their behavior and want to make change. So, in the past year, as we've started this new program, we've supported 60 men who have chosen to make a change for the safety and health of their family and for themselves. So we have a group of male-identified therapists, and we're lucky to have this incredible group of men who are very, very knowledgeable because this is a niche and you need to have the proper training to do it well. So this may not be men that we necessarily have on staff full-time, but they're working in the community in a variety of ways or are teaching at the college level, but have this passion and interest. So then they're offering a few hours of counseling a week. So we've had great outcomes from this program. And what this is really getting at is getting that early intervention because we know domestic violence without proper support will typically escalate. So getting in early when it's a lower level conflict and making change at that point. And the way this program came to be was also out of a relatively new program in partnership with Waterloo Regional Police that we call the Early Intervention Program. So, the way that program works is that a plainclothes officer works with one of our outreach workers, and together they go through calls that they have received where there was no charges laid. So, it was like a lower level incident, but it's been flagged as this family is struggling, this family is under stress. Somebody felt that it was urgent enough to call the police. So, together with our outreach worker, that family is then offered services. And of course, we have lots of services for women and children, but didn't historically have the services for men to be able to have that immediate response and to also be able to meet men where they're at, which doesn't necessarily mean an office-based counseling. Maybe that's down the road, but maybe it's important to come into the house, let's say, or meet at a coffee shop or something like that. But what we have found with that early intervention is that through looking at those statistics, we are reducing further domestic violence service calls following that intervention. And that is staying steady for up to 6 months. That's about as far as we have data for now, but we're talking pretty significant reductions in future calls. Which again, that early intervention is just saving so much struggle for the family and so much cost on what would likely lead to a greater need for higher level of community response. So getting in early and providing support to these families and really wrapping around them has been important.
That's amazing. We used to identify a specific cause area that we sort of talked about is this innovative process. And it typically is things like that, where that you're working upstream in a preventative way. And that really does sound so interesting, how you're holistically looking at it instead of having to provide shelter at the highest level of crisis. So that's really wonderful, Jen. Thank you. I love the collaboration as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We know it's such a complex issue, and you have to go about it a number of different ways across the whole spectrum, everything from primary prevention to the point of shelter. And as much as shelter is very much seen as downstream, you know, mentioning that we have so many young children come in, that is also a big opportunity for us to change that generational violence and trauma that we can see, unfortunately, from one generation to another.
Yeah, I had that same thought of the cycle. Well, I could keep asking you questions for another few hours because I've just found everything you've shared so interesting. Just want to ask if there was anything else you'd like to share or discuss before we wrap up.
So happy to be on your podcast and might use it as a little bit of an opportunity because I know you've got lots of podcast listeners to also invite people to check out our She Is Your Neighbor podcast. And we have a website that people can go to listen to episodes there. And we also created a really neat short documentary. So invite people to check that out if they want to know more too.
Absolutely. I think that's a great plug because I learned a lot and really, really admire the work that your team has done through that podcast in sharing stories and voices. And it was absolutely an inspiration for us.
United Voices is proud to collaborate with organizations like Women's Crisis Services of Waterloo Region. If this episode moved you, please share it, talk about it, and consider supporting the critical work happening right here in our region. Join us next time as we continue to spotlight the stories of resilience, innovation, and hope made possible through your support.